Hello and welcome to Because You Can't Read All the Time. I'm Maggie, and here, as always, is Irish cockfight impresario, Aaron.
Hey.
And Hitchens the dog will be wandering around throughout the duration, sharing his opinions with the world. So, we won't be doing any celebrity interviews this week. We kind of tapped out on that in the past 2 weeks talking to Mick Jones and Star Jones, but I think that went pretty well. I have one bit of business, which is that we're available on iTunes now. So you can subscribe if you just type in Because You Can't Read All the Time into the iTunes store under podcast, and you will automatically get our beautiful voices sent right to your iTunes.
And to the person who, like, downloaded our podcast 17 times in a row last week, the week before. Yeah, that was just a little weird.
Gross is what it was. It was gross. So, yeah, you better watch your back, Mr. or Mrs. Madam.
Yeah.
Just be ready for that.
It.
Yeah. So, but we did think that our interview segment went pretty well. We're going to try to do more themed episodes, if you will. We were just discussing a Bastille Day episode for next month. Bastille Day being the French version of Independence Day.
Yeah, and it's only 10 days after real Independence Day, by which I mean the independence of the United States of America.
USA. USA.
USA.
USA. Wow. That's more of like a call and response, USA. One person says it, the other says it back.
I put so much effort into that one response that I felt I was accounted for. So
I don't know why the call and response chant, USA chant, never caught on. Bastille Day, I spent last night doing research on Revolution era France. I told Aaron, I'm ready to finally speak out about this issue. You know, nobody ever really talks about the French Revolution, and I don't think that's fair to anyone involved. And, you know, those who don't study history are doomed to repeat it. And I don't think we need another French Revolution. I would hate to see the Queen of France's head get cut off again.
Yeah, isn't she pregnant? So.
Wait. Is there a Queen of France that I wasn't aware of?
Yeah, Carla Bruni or whatever. She's the
president's wife, Aaron. God.
That's basically like the queen.
I don't think you're ready for this French podcast. This might be too much too soon.
I think you should educate me.
France is a European country of a few million people in which they speak French. And in the 1700s, they had a revolution in which the queen's head was cut off. Very sad, very sad. And I watched a movie about what France was like back then last night. It was called Valmont, and it sucked.
It sounds like it sucked.
Yeah, it was not the best. It was based on Dangerous Liaisons, the original French, like, it's a book or a play, I'm not really sure. It's not based on the John Malkovich one. And my husband was like, why are you watching this instead of, like, Dangerous Liaisons? Like, why are you watching, like, the, you know, New Coke or Tab Soda version of Dangerous Liaisons? And I was like, because it has Colin Firth in it. And it's very disturbing. He has, like, a mullet the whole time. The girl who plays the girlfriend from The Waterboy is like 15 in this, and she just gets passed around like nobody's business. It was very, very bad. And it was good for like 3/8 of the movie. And then just as I was getting into it, and I was like, oh no, Valmont just caught Chevalier in Madame Marteuil's bed. Cecile's gonna be pissed about this. Colin Firth, spoiler, just dies. And then, it's like they couldn't wrap up any of the loose ends, so they're like, let's just kill Colin Firth. And then you don't get any resolution. It's just like, wait, what?
And that's bizarre.
It has all this intrigue. I mean, it's a very stereotypical, like, 18th century sort of farce. you know, people coming in one door as someone's leaving and, like, hiding in closets. And it has a lot of that. And I was digging that. I mean, I feel like I was really getting into this, as evidenced by, you know, how upset I was when Valmont found Chevalier in Madame Marteuil's bed. But, man, you know, they just dropped all of that like a hot rock. And the worst thing about Colin Firth's death in this is, like, he shows up for a duel. He's drunk. The guy's like, why don't you just apologize, because I'm not going to fight you if you're drunk. And Colin Firth is just like, no, I'm screw it. I'm going to fight you. And then he just stabs Colin Firth. And then it's over like 5 minutes later.
It sounds like if that were the whole movie, like just drunk Colin Firth getting in situations and people getting uncomfortable, I would watch it. But I gather that's not how it really is.
Annette Bening is also in it, and she's really good. And then they just, you never really find out what happened with her. Like, she shows up in the last scene, just kind of creeping in the back. And I'm like, but she was, like, the protagonist. Like, she was the person you were following the whole time. And then all of a sudden it's about Colin Firth. He dies, and then it's over. And I don't know. It was directed by the guy who did Amadeus, and I just don't think he'd gotten all the, you know, 18th century wig stuff out of his system. And so that was just him exercising some demons. Yeah. So anyway, I feel like that's sort of a metaphor for the French Revolution, where they spent all this time getting you to care about all these people in wigs, only for their lives to be cut short tragically. It's basically the same thing.
Yeah, I had never thought of it like that before, mainly because I didn't know there had been a French Revolution.
Right.
So.
And you'd never heard of Valmont, so.
I still don't know what you're talking about.
It was stupid. I don't recommend it. It passed a lonely Saturday night, though, so I guess I shouldn't complain.
It had Colin Firth. I mean,
picture, if you will, me pouring Jim Beam into a soda can, watching this alone in my house on Saturday night, and just being like, aw, snap, what's going to happen next?
That's way better than me drinking Barry Weiss in my bed and watching episode after episode of Glee.
Yeah, that is way better. Is that from when you had your surgery?
No, that was last night.
Oh, God. It was okay when you were getting over surgery. Now it's just sad. And does it not get worse as it goes on?
Well, here's what I'll say. I mean, I still enjoy it. I think there are a lot of, like, weird plot things that they're doing. And definitely, like, the first two episodes of the second season were really bad. Which, I mean, I really like Britney Spears. And I was sad that her episode was so shitty. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I just said a curse word. Yeah. But that's how strongly I feel about this.
Yeah.
And, I was about to give up, but then I thought, oh, I'll give it one more try. And all the episodes after that are pretty much like a return to what you knew before in the first part of the series. So mm-hmm. I've been chugging along, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think that show sucks. So I used to like the first season, and then like the French Revolution, it just all went to hell, you know?
Yeah. I can't stand most of the characters, which begs the question, why do you watch?
Right.
Well, it reminds me of things like Evita.
What? That's a terrible, what? No, you're going to have to explain that.
I don't know. Like,
have you ever seen Evita?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
On stage and in film.
Okay.
I don't know. Sometimes they'll play a song and I'm like, oh yeah, remember that? And then I'm like, hey, I'm going to listen to that now.
Wait, they don't, I'm so lost. I'm so confused. So you're playing, they play songs from Evita on Glee. How is it like Evita? I guess that's what I'm missing.
No, I'm just saying they'll redo songs or whatever, and one of them happened to be from Evita.
Oh, I see.
And then I'm like, oh yeah, I like that.
Yeah, Evita's good. I got no problem with Evita. I will allow that.
So yeah, I'm not proud of it. I'm just saying.
As long as you're an apologetic Glee fan, I hate people who are just like unabashed, like, oh my god, I love the Glee. And you're
for
like,
the people who wear, like, the Gleek shirts.
Yeah, and when you say to them, like, oh, what about the wild inconsistency in the character's conduct from episode to episode, or the way they just drop storylines and pick them up at their convenience, and they're just like, you just don't like the music. I mean, I hate that. I hate it more than... It's like the French Revolution really, I feel like, covers a lot of issues, and I feel like the way I feel about the injustices of the revolution, which I'll just call it for short, have a lot to do with the way I feel when people talk about Glee. They took something beautiful, i.e. the French monarchy or Glee, and made it terrible.
Hmm. So what was it you liked about the French monarchy to begin with?
They were very opulent. They, I assume, ate quite well. And they had fantastic gardens.
Yeah.
If I could say any of those things about myself, I'd be a happier person.
Okay, fair enough. I'm just wondering, like, I'm trying to get to the core of your interest. I mean, obviously it's a very topical issue because mm-hmm. we're approaching Bastille Day.
Yes.
I just want to know, you know, what animates you on this subject? Because you can say that about a lot of monarchies, and we all know that, you know, you have strong feelings about a certain monarchy.
Yeah, well, I am what's known in some circles as a cater. Cater's gonna Kate. I don't like Kate Middleton. I'll give you that. But that's because I'm jealous of her opulent lifestyle. I love the royal's opulent lifestyle.
Okay.
I think that's, like, the best thing ever.
Yeah, but then why aren't you happy that they got, that the French monarchy was treated the way it was with the head offing and everything in the revolution? Surely your jealousy could lead you to that conclusion as well.
No, because these monarchs were killed, and so I get to feel sorry for them. You know, which I guess is not really true for the way I feel about Princess Diana, but, you know, if something tragic tends to happen to royals, it's like, oh, it's so sad, their lives were so beautiful, how could they have foreseen this tragedy? You know, I feel like that's very poignant. It's like how I like the first 5 minutes of Anastasia, but not really the rest of it. I enjoy, like, oh, how beautiful Russia once was. And then, you know, the Bolsheviks invade. I'm like, that's terrible. You guys had beautiful lives. And then I'm like, oh, okay, I'm done.
You have fleeting interests.
My feelings toward the monarchy are best described as complicated.
You know, behind parents, it's the number one thing that messes up a kid. So.
I would love to meet the kid who's just, like, destroyed by the concept of, like, the divine right of kings. I just don't understand! I just don't understand! Why them, but not me?
Such a hard life!
What? Why doesn't anybody care about me? Why don't I get to be a king? You know, I would love to meet that kid because I feel like that kid would make me feel way better about all of my neuroses. I'd be like, oh, wow, at least I'm not the kid who, like, just literally can't wrap his head around the idea of a king. yeah, Bastille Day. Believe it or not, I'll bet we'll be able to come up with even more to say about the French Revolution by the 14th.
Yeah, just give us a few weeks. We'll think about it.
In the meantime, your homework is to watch Valmont. Everybody, go home and watch Valmont. If you're not already home, in which case, finish listening to us and then rent Valmont.
Yeah, it's really important, apparently.
It's key, I think, to understanding a lot of the complexities of the issues that surrounded France at that time. So, anyway, moving from one European nation to another, I would now like to talk about Erin and her profession, because I don't know whether or not you've been listening for a long period of time, but I always introduce Erin as Irish cockfight impresario. Erin, what is an Irish cockfight impresario? What does that mean? We've touched on it, but we've never really explored it. So that's what we're going to talk about today, Erin.
Yes, well, we have received a lot of, you know, questions from that one person who downloaded our podcast at the same time.
It's a very inquisitive person.
Whoever that may be. I mean, I think the main confusion here, which I think I have actually touched upon in the past, but maybe deserves some further clarification.
Mm-hmm.
I do not fight the Cox.
No.
And they don't actually fight each other as in traditional cockfighting circles, because what many people don't realize about Irish cockfighting is that the cocks actually fight other animals. So, for instance, we've had cats, small grizzly bears. What else? A shark?
Priests.
I mean, you get a lot of different, yeah, a lot of different animals up in there, up in the club. And officially, I'm just there as a sort of intermediary, but I also do a lot of financing. So I'm a little bit like, you know, the ringleader or something.
Your ringleader slash manager slash agent. Kind of a facilitator. Are you responsible for finding the other animals or people that the cocks bite?
You know, I like to leave that up to the audience because I really feel like it's a way to keep people engaged.
So wait, people can just show up with whatever they want to see a rooster fight?
Like
I could bring Hitchens to one of your matches and be like, I want my dog to get in the ring with that cock.
Yeah. I mean, you could, but in all seriousness, like, just don't, because your dog will die.
Right. Probably. So I guess...
I mean, there's no probably. Literally every animal that has come up against my cocks has died.
Even the priests?
Yeah. I mean...
Wow.
It's an underground operation,
right.
So...
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess I could see that. So I have a few questions about, you know, the technicalities of it all, you know, the terminology, the phrases, and I've written up some questions here. First of all, Irish cockfighting does not refer to you personally, it's the style of cockfighting, correct?
Oh, totally. I mean, as we've discussed in the past, I am a Latina,
mm-hmm.
So that's not a reference to me. I mean, think of me as a sort of fairy godmother of the sport, because, you know, it's all about the cocks. I'm there to facilitate the cocks, and they have a style that they adhere to.
Right.
And that is the Irish style of cockfighting. So that's the way to think about it.
Okay. And so what makes it different? Is the safety gear a little different for Irish than, say, English or Western style cockfighting?
Western style, you definitely have more safety regulations.
Why am I not surprised?
You know, yeah, right? I mean, I just, you know, the whole mantra, if you will, of Irish style cockfighting is sort of let your cocks roam free.
Right.
Because, you know, they're essentially the power in that room. They're the reason everyone's there to watch.
Right.
They're the reason behind the sport. So there's really no need for restrictions or boundaries. We just like to let that all go by the wayside.
So the cocks would be fighting each other anyway. You're just facilitating it for the entertainment of others, right?
Well, yes, exactly. And actually what you'll find is that, you know, a lot of animal rights people get upset. Oh, you can't cockfight. But, you know, it's really a way of life. Not just for me. Again, this isn't about me. It's about the cocks. For them, it's lifestyle. And we really work to encourage them,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, to build their potential. So it's really a positive atmosphere for them. And that's what I like the most. I get the most out of that.
And a lot of times they use their purses from the fights to, like, go to college and stuff, right?
Yeah, a lot of our cocks have actually made a positive impact in the communities where they came from. You know, they come back and They build businesses. They work in the hospitals. They do all this stuff. You know, it's amazing. And when I get a chance, you know, I like to go and visit them and see how you know, their community is different from what it was before.
And it's really to be commended because, I mean, it's the rare hospital that'll let a cock work there. My other question is about, again, sort of the terminology, just what a typical match looks like, what some of the slang is. So, like, you've mentioned a ring. Is it called the cock ring?
Yes, it's a cock. I know for a lot of outsiders, it's hard to accept. Okay, we hear the word cock and we giggle. You know, it's not that way when you're in the business. Like, And I should mention, as I have before, cock is spelled C-O-Q.
Is it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a technical term within our industry. I understand it sounds very similar to the way that you guys talk about cocks or whatever, but It's different. And, you know, plural is formed with a Z, so it's a little different. Mm-hmm. But you know what? It's a different industry. It's a different lifestyle.
Right.
So that's one of the things to keep in mind. So it's the cock ring, mm-hmm. D-O-Q ring.
Okay.
You know, not dirty or anything.
I never said that.
I know. There's just, I understand a lot of what I have to do, you know, when I talk to people about my livelihood is to kind of break preconceptions of what cockfighting is. And a lot of, you know, I get it. It's funny. It sounds funny. It sounds like, you know, something dirty, but It's not. It's very clean. As I've mentioned before, there's not a whole lot that, there aren't many rules or regulations. Terminology, though, there are many different names for what I do. We've talked about how I'm the ringleader. I also announce fights. I'm a financier. I'm a mentor to the cocks.
Right.
In general, people just kind of refer to me as impresario.
Right.
And that's kind of to denote my status within the industry because I am actually fairly well known on the circuit.
It's an affectionate title too as well, is it not?
There's affection, but also a little bit of fear because I'm a powerful person.
Well, my understanding, you know, I've been reading up on this a little in, you know, anticipation of this interview, and I guess I was led to believe that impresario is sort of an honorary title within the Irish cockfight community where there can only be one at any given time. You know, it's not an official thing, but it's understood that there's the impresario, and you either have to die or step down for there to be a new impresario. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, think about it as, you know, the popular Godfather franchise movies.
Mm. And books.
And books. well, you can't read all the time, Maggie. So.
Yes.
I'm like the Godfather to these cocks. Mm-hmm. The cock father, if you will.
I was going to say, could it be? Yes.
It can. And it is. It is a very sort of informal title, but it's in recognition of the fact that I have made such a difference. Like, I've taken on a lot of issues in the industry, and I've made it what it is today. So I'm young. I'm, like, a girl in my mid-20s. I will probably be impresario for a very long time, unless there's some sort of revolution.
Are you the first female impresario?
You'd be surprised. Irish cockfighting has been a sport, if you will, for, you know, over 100 years.
As long as there have been Irish people.
Yeah, I mean, I guess...
So 100 years.
Yeah, well, longer than 100 years. But obviously, it's been in the public consciousness only within recent history as, you know, Irish people have immigrated.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, it is essentially, it's based on a very regional way of cockfighting, but has grown out of proportion to that. But anyways, yes, I've forgotten the question now.
I was going to say, do you remember what I asked you? Are you the first female impresario?
No. So, okay. There have been many Irish cockfighting impresarios before me who were female, transgender, what have you.
Transgender, really?
Yeah, it's an open community.
I guess it is, so.
Yeah, we're accepting of our people. Whoever wants to Irish cockfight is welcome.
It's so. Kind of an outlet, isn't it, for sort of the disenfranchised?
It definitely is, much like Glee, you know?
yeah.
I mean, you know, the kids on that program, they all make this big to-do about how different they are or whatever. Mm. That's kind of how we are, only we're not faking it, so.
Mm. Faking It, by the way, is the title of the book Aaron is going to be writing about how cockfighting is different from Glee.
Yeah, that's actually why I've been watching so much.
It's research for Faking It. So I guess my last question is, you know, it's Irish cockfighting. Obviously, everybody knows the Irish, they loves to drink, just like they loves to be cops and fight. Do the cocks drink? Because I'll tell you, this is what I'm envisioning, is like maybe a cock gets in a fight with another cock, with his brother-in-law cock, about, you know, maybe his wife's dowry. And, you know, they get liquored up, they get in a big fight, but by the end, you know, the cock and the brother-in-law cock are, like, the best of friends, and then the wife cock comes out and, like, helps her husband burn her bride money, you know, so that it's a statement that it was never really about the money, it was about her honor. Does that kind of thing happen?
I mean, I try not to get too involved in their personal lives, certainly there's a culture of drinking, and, you know, I'd be lying if I didn't say I allowed my cocks a little sip now and again before they step into the cock ring. It's an honorable sport, and we like to keep our cocks as dry as possible.
There's just, you know, I think we're all agreed there's no cock quite like a dry cock.
You gotta keep your cocks dry and honorable, honorable all the way.
Yeah, in order for there to be honor, they must be dry. Yeah, no, I get that. I do. So that's really, I feel like we've learned a lot about Irish cockfighting, and I feel a little like LeVar Burton on Reading Rainbow, you know, where he goes out and interviews people with interesting jobs or hobbies.
Yeah, I look forward to the day when I am featured on a children's program. I think that would be great.
Is LeVar Burton still around, or what's he doing?
Who knows?
I hope he's okay.
He probably, I don't know, he's probably got a mansion somewhere where he wears crazy
sweaters
and glasses.
Well, I'll tell you why I'm worried, okay? Because we've discussed before that I don't live in the best neighborhood, right? And yeah. I was at the pool recently, and there's a pizza place we like to go to get pizza when we're all hanging out at the pool. And I hadn't been to this place till recently. Like, oh, man, Joe's Pizza. It's like the best pizza I've ever had. Why don't we go there more often? And my friend was like, yeah, every time we go to the pool, we should get Joe's Pizza. And it was like, it's agreed. Joe's Pizza. I love it. What could go wrong? Well, today I get home and my friend's Facebook status is like, I'm never going to Joe's again. I got accosted by a drug addict and my husband had to beat him up.
Oh, my God.
Joe's is, like, 2 minutes from my house walking. So, yeah, I was like, damn, we were just saying today how much we should go to Joe's. But this goes back to LeVar Burton, because I have literally no idea where LeVar Burton is. Who's to say that he's not, you know, terrorizing patrons at Joe's as we speak?
You know, this is why the paparazzi comes in useful, because, you know, how else are we supposed to keep tabs on all the celebrities?
Right, yeah. All of them. Because I have
It's just for their well-being.
I have a sort of an informal database I maintain in my home, but it's not really accurate, and it's staffed mainly by volunteers, so it's kind of hard to, you know. As far as I can tell, we still have Princess Diana is alive on there, so. I mean,
wow.
The volunteers are terrible.
That's why you gotta get some people you can pay, dude.
They won't accept payment.
Are you sure these people don't accost patrons of Joe's Pizza?
I was going to say, I think I know where they're spending their free time. Maybe. Who's to say? And furthermore, who's to judge? Maybe LeVar Burton's been working for me this whole time.
You should ask around. Just next time you're by the database. When you're in the archives, just ask.
Yeah, except the database has run out of my house. So, I'm always here, except when I'm not at work, you know. Work is when I'm not at home.
Same here.
I mean, there are other times I'm not at home, but I've just started classifying every time I'm not at home as work.
You should leave it on your answering machine.
It's like, oh, it's like, you didn't get home till like 5 o'clock in the morning on Saturday. You were so drunk. Yeah, I was at work. I was working late into the night at drinking.
That is work. Any time that you move is work. Like, literally, the scientific definition is work. So, you're not lying.
I'm not. And that's why I'm just so damn conscientious. That's not why people say I'm conscientious. That's why I am conscientious. Because every time I move, the scientists say it's work.
It's not just you, Maggie. It's everyone.
Aaron and I are going to start hosting a podcast on logic. We're going to disprove fallacies and circular reasoning.
It's in addition to this one, which doesn't do that.
The other one's called Because You Can't Think All the Time.
Yeah, we're there to help you in those times.
In this show, people come to us with various arguments that they think might be specious or somehow otherwise incorrect, and then it's on us to say, oh, no, that's wrong.
Everything's wrong, by the way, everything.
Right,
Why would they be coming to us with things that were right?
Unless they just, you know, for like an ego boost.
But that's irrational, so.
Oh, my God. So, thereby proving that, oh, my, see, this is why I would be so good at this.
Exactly.
My computer almost exploded.
My computer is run on Steam, so.
Steam and logic.
That's all you need. I just took it up to my brain.
It's like somewhere between steampunk and just good old-fashioned logic.
Yeah.
Logical. Obvious. Logical steampunk. So, that's weird, by the way, steampunk. Did you know I only recently found out what that was?
Really? How did you find out?
My friend's mom told me. She was like, oh, my sister runs a costume shop, and, you know, the economy's hit her pretty hard. The only thing really keeping her afloat right now is, steampunk. And I was like, wait, what? I thought it was, like, a band or something that was really into cosplay or something. She's like, no, it's, I know what cosplay is, but not steampunk. And she was like, yeah, you know, it's like people who just love Victorian times and, like, gizmos and, you know, everything runs on steam and they like to dress like Victorians, but, like, funky. And I was like, well, that has to be the single biggest sign of the end times that I've heard.
It is really, like, I don't know. As a normal person, and I am normal, I would like to stress that.
Cockfighting aside.
That's normal.
Okay.
But, like, you know, it just seems very odd. Like, who's sitting there going, wow, you know what I like? Is the Victorian era and when everything ran on steam.
Well, it's basically like, as I understand it, all the Kenneth Branagh parts of Wild Wild West. you know, which was a terrible movie. But yeah. Apparently somebody somewhere was like, yes, what if there was, like, modern contraptions, but they ran, like, Victorian contraptions? And that's not enough. It's like, oh, by the way, I should also probably dress like I came from Victorian times.
Well, you gotta be consistent, because, obviously.
Yeah, it's already something you made up, so you might as well see it through to its completion.
Exactly.
That's so... Yeah, so I just... It was really the weirdest thing I'd ever heard, and I was just like, I don't know... It almost might be worth it to me to be, like, unemployed if the only reason I was still in business was just allowing these weirdos to, like, live out their fantasies. But then I realized that's what I do every Sunday night when I record because you can't read all the time.
Don't hate.
That's right. No, I don't hate. I cate because cater's gonna cate.
That is true.
So, that's... all part of my weird fascination with the royals. Which you haven't seen is, like, my mannequin I'm working on.
I'm hoping that won't be there when I visit you.
I'm constructing a replica of the wedding dress, but it's all made out of, like, magazine clippings with Kate's face.
Oh, God. That's the single most horrifying thing I've heard.
Really? I guess nothing fazes me because I live down the street from Joe's Pizza.
Oh, man. Can I just, as a sort of sidebar to that, there's this thing in the Midwest called Beggar's Pizza.
Oh.
And, yeah, I saw it for the first time on one of those road signs that's like, hey, stop at exit 52A because there's food there. And it had like... you know, Taco Bell, China Buffet, and then Beggar's Pizza. And there's literally, like, their sign is a hobo standing by the words Beggar's Pizza.
In case you missed the idea there.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like, who's going to be like, you know what, I'm really hungry. I want to eat where the hobos eat.
Well, like, is it somehow different than regular pizza? Is it, like, cooked on top of garbage pail lids or something?
I don't know. I've just... It always makes me feel uncomfortable when I hear about it. And I thought it was only... This was when I was driving into Indiana. And I thought, okay, it's an Indiana thing. It doesn't sound like a chain. But there was a Groupon for Beggar's Pizza in Chicago recently. And I'm just baffled. Like,
I think that's kind of like, you know, prejudiced against the homeless too. You know, it's like, let's use this group of unfortunate people as a mascot for our pizza. You know who probably doesn't eat a lot of pizza? Beggars.
Well, and that's also another thing. Like, what are they trying to get at? Like, beggars can't be choosers, so come eat our pizza.
Do they, like, do you think they turn beggars away? Like, if you showed up and was like, I'm so hungry, and they're like, get out of here, you bum.
Probably. Probably.
This is why the Midwest, you know, I'm sure Chicago's all very well in its way, but by and large, I'm just, the Midwest, you know, like, can we talk?
Okay, I'm not sure I'm gonna like what I hear, but...
Please, I just feel like maybe it's not the best place in the world. And I brought this up to my grandfather, who is from Chicago, and I expressed my theory that people weren't meant to inhabit the Midwest. And he goes, no, and shakes his head like, no, no one should have ever lived there.
I think in general that's probably true. I mean, it's hard because I know people who say, oh, no one should live in the American Southwest either. Like, that's not suitable. But I actually would choose that sort of a climate over this one.
Well, I feel like the Midwest, you know, there's not a lot of varied topography. Unless you're near an urban center, it tends to make you kind of weird. You can get very overweight quite quickly, I feel.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of things that would give me pause, certainly. I've lived in Kansas, and, you know, they're way too into the Wizard of Oz there, to a disconcerting degree, I would say.
Oh, dear. I've been to Kansas many a time.
And
I didn't get that where I was going, but I also am still baffled as to why I was there as often as I was.
Yeah, that's weird. I don't know what to tell you, but I mean, I've driven my share in Kansas, and it's got to be one of the saddest things I've ever seen. The other thing, too, is, you know, you can see why Dorothy was so desperate to just live in her head, you know?
Yeah.
And the Wizard of Oz thing, I could see why that would be preferable to you, that nightmarescape would be preferable to you over living in Kansas.
It's like, what else are you going to do? Because it's not like she was doing anything there to begin with, like helping on the farm, I guess, but that just involved getting dirty and falling in pig pens and
yeah, she did
having people
that.
Yell at you.
And that lady on the bike always trying to kill your dog. It sounds terrible. It's a good thing whatever happened to Dorothy happened. Which brings me to my final point for the evening. We would like to talk about gun control. It's a very serious matter. I'm sure
Yes. We
have opinions about them. That's not really what I want to talk about. We don't really actually want to talk about gun control. It's like how Aaron and I have been friends, these many, six years?
Probably.
5 or 6 years. No, more than, anyway, a very long time. And I have no idea what most of Aaron's politics consist of. And it's never particularly bothered me. And so we're not really going to get into why ruin a good thing.
I don't even think I know what my politics consist of.
I get the pleasure of guessing what they might be. What I want to talk about is the NRA's children's wing, which involves a mascot, or at least it used to back in Jason Priestley times, called Eddie Eagle. And Eddie Eagle was a cartoon who taught kids about gun safety with a little help from his friend, Jason Priestley. Let me see if I can get a clip rolling here for you. It's quite the thing. Jason Priestley just came up. He appears to be involved in some sort of activity that looks very hard. He's got a light, and he's got like a desk lamp, and he's sitting at a desk, and he's putting small things together.
Hello there. Coming just about to preview our new Eagle Eyes safety show. Quite a cast of characters here.
Oh, it's like a slide show.
There's old Theodore Eagle. Never misses a beat when it comes to water safety. And Amelia Eagle. Always alert for fires. And of course, there's Eddie Eagle. Alert for gun safety. What? You haven't heard of Eddie Eagle? Why, he's the number one ace in the skies. A real hero, I'd say.
Okay, so I lost Erin, but while I'm waiting for her to come back, I would like to talk about how the NRA wastes its time introducing you to Amelia Eagle and another eagle who are interested in air and water safety. You're never going to hear from them again. Clearly the NRA doesn't really care about water safety or, you know, aeronautical safety. They invented those purely to create a context for Eddie Eagle. So wait with me as I bring Aaron back up.
You.
Hello. You missed it. Jason Priestley was introducing us to Amelia Eagle, who does something with airplanes, and some other eagle who does stuff with water safety. And I was just pointing out that was a total waste of time, because clearly Amelia Eagle and the old eagle are not fully realized characters because they don't have anything to do with guns.
Yeah, that's a little weird. Maybe it's just to kind of sneak in the gun talk, you know, like, oh, this is a regular cartoon. Oh, no, it's not guns.
Yeah, I mean, well, I just feel bad for the kid who's like, I just know Amelia Eagle's going to come back.
It's, you know, false hopes.
Well, and friend of the podcast, Caitlin, points out that in the opening, Eddie Eagle, you know, there's a scenario where Eddie Eagle, I guess, is sort of spying on some children in an attic, and he sees them, and they catch a gun, they find a gun, and he teaches them, you know, if you find a gun, stop, don't touch, leave the area, tell an adult, complete with a little dance that goes nice. With it. But yeah, friend of the blog, Caitlin, points out that Eddie Eagle, at the beginning, claims that there are 5 or 6 children playing in the attic, but only 4 are shown dancing, which leads her to assume that 1 to 2 of the kids have been shot.
It's just a statistical truth, you know, like,
it's like how,
that's the number of kids who would probably end up messing with the gun and dying, so.
Right. Well, she says, she calls it the silenced failures of Eddie Eagle. It's the stuff the NRA didn't want you to know, and Jason Priestley's just the pretty face.
Just slap Jason Priestley on anything, and it's suddenly all fine.
Was he a big gun guy? I guess I missed that.
Yeah, I don't really know. I mean,
there's so much we don't know about Jason Priestley.
Yeah, you feel like you know him, but you really don't know the first thing. So.
Yeah, everybody thinks they know a little something about Jason Priestley. I mean, it's so common for people to be like, oh, well, you know how Jason Priestley is. And everybody nods, like, oh, yeah, yeah, Jason Priestley. But no one, he's an enigma.
Yeah, well, I mean, and he's the sort of guy you just kind of, you hear the name and you can conjure up a face and you're like, yeah, that's familiar. Like, I really know him. Like, you have this sense, like, I know what that's about. Don't even start to tell me. Like, I could write a book on Jason Priestley.
I have.
But, yeah, and I've read it and enjoyed it.
It's
but
really good. It's really good.
You should look it up on Amazon, so.
It's called Priestley. It's called Maggie on Priestley.
It's pretty well.
It has 2 titles. In some places it's called Priestley, and in other places it's called Maggie on Priestley.
I mean, sales for both titles did pretty well, from what I recall.
Well,
so.
one was the title in Britain, and the other one was here. In Britain, I need no introduction, so it was just Priestley.
You're much better known there.
I am, for some reason. You know, I feel like I got my name out while I was there for a year.
People are still talking about you, Maggie.
I made a wave in that country, the like of which will never be seen again. I feel like they probably still talk about me. I mean, I know they do because of Priestley.
Well, and it was really hard for me because, you know, then I stayed an extra couple of years after you guys left, and I, you know, everywhere I went, everyone was just like, hey, what about that Maggie girl? And I'm like, you know what? I'm more than just Maggie. I'm more than Maggie's friend.
In fairness.
Like, it's no me, but no.
Well, I feel like a lot of people drew a parallel because you wrote a competing book on Jason Priestley, which is Water Under the Bridge. I'm not going to, you know. But it was pretty similar. And the fact that you decided to call it, you know, Jason instead of Priestley, it was still pretty obvious what you were trying to do.
Well, I mean, sometimes you're just inspired by other people's work, and you want to put your own spin on it. So I'm not going to apologize for that. I think I added something to the discussion.
Well, and the Academy already,
you know,
the Academy
discussion
is already,
on Jason Priestley.
The Academy has already held you accountable for the fabrications. The fabricated parts of your book where you just cut whole stories of Priestley's life out of whole cloth, you know?
Well, that's what I'm talking about. You feel like you know so much about the guy, but you don't know. And I didn't conduct any interviews with anyone who was or knew Jason Priestley, but you know what? I thought I knew enough. So
it was more
you
than
know, just that was, and I own up to it. I think I added a lot, you know, to the discussion, nonetheless.
Yeah.
So.
And, I mean, to be fair, the field of impressionistic biography is a pretty underpopulated one. Or it's
just, I just wanted to add to the canon, so.
And I think it is considered canon in most scholarly priestly circles.
Oh, sure. I mean, it has to be, because again, people have preconceptions about this man, and they really want to get them out there, so.
There were some.
I was one of many.
Well, your book came in really handy when they discovered what they thought was a funeral elegy that had been written by Jason Priestley. And people were unsure. I mean, a lot of people argued it was in the same style that he wrote and spoke, but there were others who were maybe not so sure. And all the only person it was attributed to were the initials JP. And so actually, the way you wrote about Jason Priestley and described his style of prose was actually really helpful for scholars in sort of parsing out the bits of the funeral elegy that were maybe written by Jason Priestley and the other that were maybe written by what's referred to as the mystery author.
Yeah. I mean, I know we're getting a little off topic. These are all really prescient issues and, you know, people talk about them. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe one day we should sit down and really go in depth on, you know,
well, there's a lot
the
of
scholarly circle of Priestley.
There's a lot of arguments, too, that Jason Priestley didn't even star in his own stuff. A lot of people think it might have been a bunch of different actors or maybe one aristocratic actor.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of debate, and there's no way we'll ever know. That's the thing. Like, you just have to kind of enjoy what he left us.
Yeah, so. He left so few written records, you know. And the fact that in his will, he only leaves his wife his second best bed is really weird.
He was a weird guy, but
he might still be alive. There's really no way to know.
It was so long ago, you know, like, he's become like this larger than life idea.
Mm-hmm. So Jason Priestley, God bless him or don't. Yeah. So anyway, I feel like we've said all we have to say about the issues. Our last segment in which we come up with a concept for a porno based on a current event. It's now that time. My proposal, I came out of a conversation I had with my husband in which I wondered aloud why there weren't more pornos based on Ayn Rand novels. And he was like, well, what would you call them? And I said, well, Reardon Steel comes to mind. Reardon Steel being the name of one of the companies, and Atlas Shrugged. Or who is John Galt screwing?
Yes, I love all of this.
So those are my contributions. They're not current, but I feel like what with the Tea Party and everything, you know.
It's important to keep things current for all walks of life, all members of the political spectrum.
This is my shout out to the Tea Party.
Yeah.
one of none others. This will be the only one. So, yeah. Again, we decided we'd not go political, but I will say that's the only one you're going to get. Aaron?
What?
Do you have any suggestions, or are we just going to leave it at that?
Yeah, I guess we could leave it at that. There was the Gay Pride Parade in Chicago this weekend. So, I mean, there really? Are so many different ways I could go with that.
Really, Aaron? Really?
What?
No. Okay.
What?
So the Pride Parade. Just anything about the Pride Parade.
Okay, so let's make it more interesting per Maggie's request.
Were there any celebrities at the Pride? I just feel like, you know, you could do better. Like, so, is there anybody famous at the Pride Parade?
I don't know. I mean, I've never... It's way on the north side. I've never been. I was unaware it was going on until I got a facial Thursday, and that has nothing to do with the porno.
Sorry, I laughed. Continue.
Yes, so I was unaware of the Gay Pride Parade. I went to get a facial Thursday, and then basically I'm in there talking to the girl who I usually get a facial from, and she's great. Her name is Brittany, and she's small and like this rocker chick, and she's hilarious. And she's like, so what are you going to do this weekend? And I was like, I don't know. Like, I don't know, we'll see. I've been really busy lately. Like, I'm pretty lame. So I had no good answer. Mm-hmm. And she was like, Oh, because it's the Pride Parade. Aren't you going to the Pride Parade? Oh my god, it's like the highlight of the year. What are you doing? And this isn't like in Boys Town or anything. Like, it's downtown.
Yeah.
Like, it's not as though that's a normal response in this sort of a situation.
Right.
And I was kind of taken aback, but apparently it's the highlight of a lot of people's year, whether or not they are gay.
The whole year?
Yeah, that's what she said.
Even with, like, the St. Patrick's Day parade and stuff?
Yeah, but I mean, to be fair, the rest of our conversation included, like, what drugs she's tried and stuff,
yeah.
So I don't know, like, where on the spectrum she lies as far as normality. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on there, but I'm just saying it's a big deal, apparently, and I've never been. And so maybe there's a lot of gay sex that goes on.
I'm just saying the highlight of her year, it parade-wise, might be a little different than, say, the highlight of the year for the chief of police.
I don't know, man.
Like, I'm guessing he probably gets a little bit more excited about St. Patrick's Day, but you never know. Again, I'm stereotyping. Cops are Irish, but...
But they are.
Like, all of them.
I have yet to see a non-Irish cop anywhere in the world. Like, you go to, you know, Mumbai, and they're all Irish. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, they're like, oh, top of the morning to you. Welcome to Mumbai.
And you're just like, what the hell? But that's the way the world works.
Would you be wanting to see the cockfights tonight, young girl? Because Irish people call young girls young girl.
as you would expect them to.
They call everything by what it is, which I think is refreshing.
They're just honest, okay?
That's why they call them the honest Irish. You're learning a lot about the Irish tonight.
That's what we're here to do, educate.
We taught you about the French, we taught you about the Irish, we taught you about the gays. I don't really know what else you want from us.
Yeah, if you have demands beyond that, then I don't know what to tell you.
Then you should just apply to college. Anyway, so
you're like,
yes.
You're like cracking up a lot. I don't know if it's me or you.
I don't know. So we'll finish up then while Aaron rests. But that was this week's Because You Can't Read All the Time. I'm going to edit this heavily.
Yeah, please do.
So, a good night, Aaron. And good night to me. Good night, everybody.